All right, welcome to the Acceptable Accuracy Podcast. This is Tyler.
And I'm Philip.
And welcome to part two of our series on USPSA. So we have Brent and Daryl returning today as well. So why don't you guys go and say hi.
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 All right, very good. Hi. So 10,000 foot view, why don't we go ahead and review of last week. So what is USPSA, Brent?
USPSA is a course of fire that is under direction of a range officer or a safety officer. You have a certain amount of targets to shoot, a certain amount of rounds, and a written stage brief that tells you how to do so. There is a timer, and on your last shot, that is recorded, and your hit factor is your score.
My man, look at you go with the night. Did you read that?
No, I did not.
Nice.
Great job. We always talk about in sales, you have to have the elevator pitch. I feel like that was a perfect elevator pitch for USPSA.
You know,
that last episode last week.
Oh my gosh.
That's great. Thanks, guys. You're welcome, man. That's right. Phillip's in sales now, so he's like, I got my elevator pitch, bro. That's
off
great.
The rails already. We're going to be like 4 seconds into this thing.
We are a minute and something seconds in. That's great. That's going to be the clip right there. I already know it.
100%. Oh. They're going to use that, and they're going to put it on all the advertisements on TV for USPSA. Perfect.
Perfect. That's the poster child right there. We don't need JJ Rakaz on here like we did last week.
He's a lot taller than I remember him being.
Yeah,
and a lot more Dutch than I remember him being.
I'm going to sidetrack this right now, guys. I think I said this once in one of the other shows, but I was at Curioptics Nationals last year. I got a reshoot on one of the stages because of equipment failure. JJ is back there. I didn't know he was back there. Mm-hmm. So the second time I shoot, I know he's back there. I friggin' tanked this thing. I got Rakaza watching me. My reloads suck. My shooting sucks. My footwork sucks. And I look back and he's got that JJ smile. Like he's always smiling. And I didn't know if he was laughing at me or he was happy that I was done.
I thought the timer was the only thing that created stress in this sport.
Oh.
I know, right?
Did he hand you his business card for his like classes that he holds?
He was awesome. JJ is literally one of those guys that he encourages everybody. The thing that you really want to do is just be respectful to those guys and let them encourage you, or you encourage them after they're done with their game face. Mm-hmm. So we'll get into that actually in this episode because we'll weed that out later.
Yeah, well, not to sidetrack us even more, but JJ Rakaza and I have a lot in common. Not only are we fantastic USPSA shooters, one of us just happens to be a lot more fantastic.
Liars.
He's also a reality TV star. If you're really interested in seeing him, he was in the show called Top Shot. Fantastic show if you haven't had a chance to watch it before.
What is Top Shot? What is that?
Oh, dude, have you not watched those?
We're not really going to go down that.
Oh, no. Here we go.
Top Shot, sponsor us.
Yeah.
Top Shot, just come back. I don't care if you're sponsored or not. Just bring it back. Let's go.
That was literally, I'm missing out on something. So what is Top Shot?
Oh, gosh.
I guess the first question is, when did it come out?
Like early 2000s, maybe?
Yeah, that's probably why. I was like five.
Well,
next episode, we'll cover Top Shot. But it basically was a shooting TV show that had a whole bunch of different competitions with different style of firearms and some non-firearm stuff where you'd compete. They had teams. They'd go head-to-head. They'd have anything from like old guns to new guns to bow and arrow to throwing axes, all that kind of stuff. And then whichever team did the worst, they would vote people off the island. At some point, they would all go down to like...
Island?
Well, I mean, out of the whatever. Anyway,
the ranch.
It's a saying because Survivor.
Yeah.
Anyway, then eventually they get down to like the top few shooters, and then whoever would finish last would get eliminated, basically, and then you end up with the top shot.
Hmm. So okay. It started in 2010. There's five seasons. I highly recommend that you watch them just because they're very entertaining, and I really enjoyed them. Yeah. And there's a bunch of dudes on there that, you know, Blake and Gabby, Seeklander. Yeah. There's a bunch of dudes on there. JJ. So
fun fact, a guy from Michigan won the last season of Top Shot.
Yeah. He was like a teacher.
Free gun dude. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's
USPSA.
Yeah. This show came out when I was in high school.
I thought you were going to say when you were in middle school. That was probably like in grade school.
2010, I just started high school, so I was 13, 14 when it came out. But, all right, so I guess either way, so back on track to the episode with USPSA. So this episode is going to be primarily on match directing and what that entails. So, Brent and Daryl, how long have you guys been match directors for USPSA at our club?
This is our third season.
Okay. How'd you guys get into that? Like, how long have you guys shot USPSA before that even all happened?
So we started shooting USPSA probably 2018, towards the end of the season, 2018.
Okay.
And then from the first year or so, it was on and off. We were doing, 1 month we'd do Steel Challenge, next month we'd do USPSA. and our club has a very nice area that on bigger matches, we brought our trailers down and could set up in this little campground with a fire pit and stuff. And after the match, we would sit around the fire, have dinner and beverages. And it came up, the USPSA director at the time and was sitting there with us having conversation. And we found out that it was going to be his last season, his last year, because he was moving on to something else. And Brent and I just both looked at each other at the same time and asked if we could do it together. And they said yes. And that was pretty much it. We were all in at that point.
That's so awesome. That's so cool. So it all happened pretty quick then, getting into USPSA. It's like, hey, we're the match directors now.
It happened so quickly that we didn't even know what we were getting into, Tyler.
What do you mean by that? Like, what do you mean? Like, what does it entail? What's involved in being a match director? Go for it, man. Mister, this is only going to be a 15-minute episode.
Well, aside from what happens at the club, there's a thing called a Michigan section that we're a part of. Okay. And it has its own director and has board members and this and that. And, you know, we're required or supposed to go to yearly meetings. And all of that is stuff that we didn't know about. We had no clue that was part of it. And it's, you know, we're working through it. We're getting into it. It's been probably the hardest thing to learn.
Really?
Yeah.
What definitely. Do you mean by that?
Just the way the clubs interact with each other.
Politics is where I'm going to go with that.
Yes. Very, yeah. Very good point. Really? Brent. It's
so what you're saying is don't dig into that.
No.
We are so blessed at South Kent. I know that there's politics. I know that people have disagreements. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the action sports, like I'm saying, there's a really good continuity. And I said this in the episode previous, that our brothers and sisters at IDPA, we share a similar, you know, like they take care of all the 101 stuff. Even our three-gun match director will build stuff that he'll build off of the next Sunday. And I think we're doing well. We could do better. But like Daryl said, keeping back on track, there's a bunch of stuff that we needed to learn. And when I say we, that means Daryl, because he learns it and then he teaches it to me.
That's what friends are for, right?
Yeah, well, that's what I have Philip for. It's great.
Daryl's the details guy.
Yep.
Like, Daryl knows details and how it goes and stuff like that. And the reason he and I do so well at this is because of that.
Mm-hmm. I get that, man.
Thank you.
I mean,
Brent.
It's funny because I feel like there are times that's a lot like Phil and I, where he does all the research and then I'll do some research and I kind of go up to him and it's like, I can see how you concluded with this because I would do the exact same thing. So thanks, Philip.
Hey, no problem. Well, then that being said, though, you have the people that are the ones that are the details, do the research, but then you also have the doers.
So,
And I think that would be like Tyler, and then obviously I think Brent and Daryl very much share that.
Brent and I have the same title at work.
And operations director. And I'm gonna brag on our two guests today because they won't do it themselves because they're humble dudes, but they run a fantastic match. And kind of we talked about last episode, where Tyler will kind of dump himself into something, and that's how he got really good at shooting in a very short period of time comparative to other people. Brent and Daryl put their heart and soul into every match that they run, and they make everyone feel involved, invited. Yep. They run a fantastic match. The previous match director did a really good job with matches and handed them off like a really good, you know, functional program. And more or less, like, Brent and Daryl just took it and ran with it and see if they can take it to the next level. Mm-hmm. So with all that being said, that I want to put that as a frame of the rest of this conversation so that people who are listening understand why Brent and Daryl are on this podcast today talking about it, because they invest a lot in it.
They have. And to even add on to what Philip had just said, when I first started USPSA back in, I don't know, 2021, I think, I didn't even realize that Brent and Daryl essentially just kind of took it over for the past, year or two at that point. And for me, like, it seemed like they've ran it for years. I had no idea. And it was so cool how welcoming they were, how professional. I don't know what you're talking about. What? They are. They're great. So, no, I'm very thankful for Brent and Daryl and all of their hard work and their dedication and passion that they put into USPSA at our club. So I guess that's not true. I've done one mini USPSA match at another club before, and it was okay. But I will admit, I feel like I've been very spoiled and blessed at South Kent.
We all have.
Yep. Yeah. We really have. I mean, like I'm saying, every place has its problems, but if we continue to be the solution to those problems instead of the angst of those problems, we'll make it better.
Well, I think of an important leadership lesson that I've learned is don't give me a problem without a solution, or at least a possible solution. You know, I feel like I've done that early on in life, in my career. Like, I've done that. My pastor or my boss would look at me. He's like, okay, now what? What are we going to do about it? I'm like, oh, no. It's like, you don't expect me to solve all the problems, man. I'm like, that's why I hired you. I'm like, yeah, you're right. So, but I digress. So I guess what else is involved in being a match director? Walk us kind of through that you're willing to talk about, I guess.
So I'll take a portion of this, and I know I'm kind of bragging on Daryl, but he's worthy of it. The day after a match, is it the day after or the day of? The registration opens for the next match.
Day after.
Thank you, Daryl. Mm-hmm. He is inundated with emails about this and that, and I'm this. Ooh. So Daryl takes care of all of that correspondence with shooters. And he does a super nice job of it. It's just a really good relationship with that. He answers all the questions and helps people navigate the 101 class, all that type of stuff. But as far as the next steps for that, and that happens right up till the day of the match. He has to deal with all of the shooters and the questions and the problems and the no shows and because he takes care of registration as well. But he and I start building stages. And when I say building stages, we get out our little toys, they call them, and the 3D stage builders, and we start putting stuff together. And with that said, that sounds like a lot of fun, and it is, and we enjoy it. The problem with it is that you have to think through every scenario of how do I say this? If you've got somebody that's trying to game your stage, somebody will figure out how to game your stage or do something stupid. I'll have to say that. You have to stop people from being stupid. There we go. Okay. You do.
What?
You
people are stupid at doing USPSA stages? Really?
Like I'm saying, when that beep goes off, you forget everything that you're doing. And, you know, we got to stop people from breaking the 180 or giving them an excuse to look at it or think about how they're retreating or doing some type of no low or a table start where you have to pick your firearm. We have to think through all of that stuff. And of course, put that into play with new shooters, and now we're going to teach them that. But one of the things that Daryl and I agree on 100% is we need to help people get ready for the level two, the level three, and yep. the national matches.
Absolutely. And
if we don't, I think one of the reasons we're having so much success the last couple of years with our attendance numbers is people are using our match for, hey, these guys are going to push us and get some stuff out. So that's the next step. Daryl, you can take the next step, which I don't really know what it is.
That's fantastic.
So, yeah. So as match directors, you know, we're responsible for the, well, number one, scheduling the match, you know, figuring out when it's going to be, taking care of all of the squatting, which happens inside a practice score, constructing all of the stages, figuring out, you know, we got to juggle how many stages we're going to set up by how much, how many people we have signing up. And we just had to, normally we run 7 and we just had to go to 8 because we have so many people that want to come and shoot the match with us. So that's a really good thing. and then we gotta make sure that the staff is there. When I say staff, I mean people that are volunteering to help. So we get together on Friday, the Friday before the match, to set all these things up and walk through them as best we can, make sure that there's no pitfalls or traps or, you know, places where you can stand and see every target.
Yeah.
And it still gets, some things still get by us, but we're getting better. And then, of course, the morning of the match, we got to get all the targets hung because you can't hang them. If you hang cardboard the night before, it just wilts with the dew in the morning, so they can't go up until the morning of.
I never thought of that. That's such a good point. Wow.
So we got to do make sure the steel is set, make sure the movers are set. Take care, get everybody registered, make sure that they are in the proper division that they with the gun that they want to shoot. And then we have a safety briefing with everybody just before we shoot. And Brent and I always take, you know, kind of hand that back and forth every other month. One of us will lead that meeting. And so we also have a range master who is in charge of, you know, he's the authority over everything that happens during the match, safety-wise, and make sure that it runs to the rules of USPSA. And Jim Klugowitz is his name. He is a certified range master, but because this is a level one match that we run every month, if he is off doing something else, he does a lot of major matches throughout the year, so he can't always be with us. And when that happens, either Brent or myself will take the range master position. One will be the match director. The other one will be the range master. And then that just adds a whole new level of complexity to it because we have to deal with the scoring calls and the DQs and the what if I do this and can I do that. And
so as match directors, yes. Are you guys competing as well, or do you guys, what do you guys do then?
Go ahead, Brent.
Well, up until this month, yes. But looking at 84 shooters signed up for this following match already, and what are we 2 weeks away? 2.5
3 weeks
away? 3 weeks.
Wow.
We have 84 shooters signed up right
That's
now.
That's insane. Wow.
I know it's insane. It's such a blessing. But sometimes I tell Daryl, I was like, man, I don't know if I'm going to get to shoot. And he's like, yeah, we'll shoot. I will admit that there has been times where Daryl and I have shot less than optimal.
Oh, yeah. Because,
you know, I can't tell you how many times, you know, we have radios that are throughout the range for, obviously, for safety. Mm-hmm. Two-way radios, sorry. And I can't tell you how many times the RO running me will be like, you know, make ready. And I put a magazine, drop my slide, and they go, you know, range master or a match director. I'm like, dang it. I'm like, can I do this real quick? You know, it is a, well, you know, what was your question?
Are you guys shooting or what does that look like?
We do. And the nice thing about it is a squad. And for those that are listening, we usually have Tyler and Phil on our squad, which is awesome because they'll pick up the slack for us and the whole squad will.
The squad realizes that you guys have a lot of responsibilities, which is one reason why I love our squad. Cause we're like, exactly. No problem.
It comes out good. So, but to keep going on what happens, you know, once all that gets set up and the safety briefing and the shooting happens, there's always a tablet change that usually Daryl has to deal with. We do have another guy there that is kind of a, let's say, tablet master.
Savior?
Yes. Yep. And he will help us out when he's around, and it's super nice because he knows everything about it.
That's awesome. But,
no, there's a whole bunch of people that participate. Would this be a good time, Daryl, to speak about our setup crew?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was actually going to be the question
that's always
I was going to ask.
Good time.
It's always a good time. So we've got there's a nucleus of a setup crew, like Daryl mentioned, that happens the Friday before, and a lot of USPSA clubs have to shoot their matches on Sundays because they don't have a setup crew that can work on Fridays. So they set up on Saturday.
What is that group called? The squad called?
They call themselves the Geezer Squad because they're all retired, and I hate that name. But I don't know. They're retired dudes, and they give of their time and energy. And you know, we usually have breakfast that morning, like seven thirty or something like that. We make sure that we're out on the range by 9, setting up, and as this grows, it becomes even more demanding on those guys, not only just us, but those guys. We did pick up a new one, though. So Mr. Bing, one of our guys that comes in and usually hangs targets in the morning because he's still running a business, looks like he sold his business and he's going to be retired. So we're going to pick up another guy.
Awesome. Nice.
Yep.
How many guys do you typically have for your geezer squad?
Boy. The
core is 6. But there's other ones that come in once in a while.
Yeah. Some guys that aren't retired that have a Friday off, you know, or do something like that, Tyler. Mm-hmm. And
just because I have a day off doesn't mean I'm free. Let's clarify that.
I take the day off to go do this. So anyway, but we just couldn't do it without these guys. And we tried to build them up as much as we can and try to make as much effort to make it easy on them. One of the things that Daryl and I have done that I haven't seen done yet anywhere else, but then again, this is the first time we've been match directors. Daryl and I put booklets together, build books, we call them. So it shows the stage. It'll have a list of all of the parts that need to go out to that stage to build that stage. Mm-hmm. It'll have a map of what bay it's going in. We try to get as much information in that as possible so that there's not, hey, what are we doing over here? And what size steel do we need here? And how's this wall go? I mean, there's literally pictures of that. And these guys do really, really well with that.
Okay. And when he says Daryl and I, he means Brent. That was Brent's master plan, and it's working beautifully.
But like I'm saying, Daryl gets the input. He builds stages just like I do, and he sends me sheets, and I stick them in there. We put stuff together, and it's not uncommon for us to be done building 7 really good stages with movers and complex walls and shooting lines and things like that for us to be done noon on Friday.
That's incredible.
That is wow. That's awesome.
With that said, that doesn't mean Daryl and Brent are done.
No. Yeah.
No.
So what happens after the setup then?
Yeah, that's you, Daryl.
So after they're set up, we have to do a final walkthrough, mm-hmm. and because the stages get entered into the tablets. Now, we talked about the tablets a little bit last week, where with Practice Score does all the scoring. Well, we can't. In order to do that scoring, we have to enter the stages into the tablets, so that we have to make sure that all of the targets are there, make sure that the right number of targets is there, the style of targets, mm-hmm. All of that, so that when we start the match on Saturday morning, all of the stages match up, and there's no, because if things don't match up, now if we don't catch it right away, then we have to throw a stage out, and that's, knock on wood, Brent and I have not had to throw a stage out of a match yet.
Wow, that's awesome.
We were close last month.
Remember we were close.
Blew down.
Yep.
Yeah. Natural disasters. But that was, can't that even wasn't keep because them from of our completing. Setup, though. Yeah.
No, you're right, Daryl. You're right. Yeah.
But if you have something that has enough range equipment failure or something, and you have to change it, well, you either have to have all of the people that have already shot it come back and reshoot it, or you have to get rid of that stage. On a local level, that's not really a huge deal, but it's something that you don't want to happen. Because if, and you know, both Brent and I are very hopeful that we will get to do a level 2 or even a level 3 match before we're done being match directors at South Kent. And mm-hmm. we want to make sure that when we get to that point, we have everything dialed in.
So for those who don't know, what is a level 2 match? What's a level 3? What's the difference?
Well, number one, you have to be a USPSA member to shoot them. Mm-hmm. And they're usually a bigger match. Level 2s are still only one day most of the time, but they're bigger. They are advertised more to mm-hmm. get more people to come. You're looking for sponsors so that now you can have gift tables and trophies to hand out. What else is there, Brent?
It's just a bigger, badder, cooler.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You get into level 3s, now you're talking about multiple day matches, a lot more competitors, a lot more prizes, mm-hmm. Usually more expensive to shoot, unfortunately.
But, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean,
and then, you know, finally the level 4 would be a national championship match.
So for these different level of matches, I know you mentioned you have to be a USPSA member. Do you have to be a certain class level or does it matter?
You do not. You can be anything that you want. As we get higher levels, like the nationals, you may not mm-hmm. get in. Because of the cutoff or whatnot.
Yeah.
And like Daryl said, the nationals are very expensive, but it is the Christmas day of the year. Do you know what I'm saying? It's
for sure.
The Super Bowl.
The best way for a lower class shooter to shoot nationals is to go work it, which is what we're going
to
do.
Or have very nice match directors that give you a slot.
Well, here's the things, guys. Like, usually the nationals are down south, which is cool. I mean, move them around the country. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's usually in the summer, so it's hot as blazes down in – where are they usually at?
Like Talladega.
Talladega.
Yeah.
Yep. So last year they moved them to Ohio, to Cardinal Center. I actually Daryl had some family obligations that he was out on, but I was accepted last year to go and work a stage. It was 400 plus shooters. It was
wow,
ridiculously super fun. I learned a ton, but I got to shoot the match. You know, I got to shoot a nationals because I was working, just like Daryl said. So mm-hmm. go run.
Didn't you make the commercial too? Or the ad or the social media post or something like that?
I have no idea.
Oh, your Jeep made it. That's what it was.
My Jeep. Yeah, my Jeep was in it. Right.
Your Jeep made it. I remember now. Yep.
Jeez. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was flexing a lot, but.
One of the cool things I know too with those higher level matches is with nationals, and I don't know if areas are included in this, but USPSA is its own like organization, but it's based off of IPSC. We mentioned in the previous episode.
Sure.
But if you do really well at the national level in the United States or in any country, realistically, that shoots IPSC, you can go on to do the world shoots. And I forget how often they do those, but you have an opportunity to potentially put yourself head to head against the best shooters in the world.
Yes, you do.
So when you're there working those, you know, you guys have the opportunity to see like the top level shooters because they're trying to get those slots, right? Or they're sponsored by Glock or SIG or Canik or whoever, right? Like you get to see some of the coolest, like top level shooters do their thing.
Yep, we do. And
they also like get to see us.
Yes. Yep. they get to call the CRO and have us challenged on a call. That's awesome. which happened to me this last year, but that's cool. And like Daryl said, so this year, Daryl and I were both accepted to be ROs at the Nationals, which is, again, in Ohio. So, yeah. So we will be taking
off. Congratulations.
End of June. That's awesome. Yeah.
Great job.
It's if we're alive after the Wolverine. So
yeah, okay. So it's like being like the official on the Super Bowl, right? Like you're officiating the Super Bowl of shooting.
It is, yes, it is. And like I'm saying, if you go in with the right attitude of serving and, you know, making it easy and fun and all that stuff, there's a lot of stress there too, guys, from that. At that level of a match, even at our levels of matches, we try really hard. Daryl and I try very hard to put stages so that we won't get backups. You're always going to get backups. It's just, you can't do it. You know, somebody coming off of a 24 round classifier to a hard to set up like we had this last year or last month, there was people that were backed up. My advice to everybody is always have a snack, get a drink, go to the bathroom and talk with your fellow shooters and hang out. And just stop being a baby about, it's backed up. Yup, it is.
So I guess going back to stage design, what does that look like from start to finish with your guys' planning process?
Jeez.
Go for it, man.
I heard they play with Lego. That's what I heard.
It is cool. The Lego of the action shooting sports. I'll give it that. So we both have it's a 3D builder's kit. Yeah. So it has miniature versions of walls, barrels, targets, cardboard targets, steel targets, all that stuff. Everything that we would use on to build a regular, you know, life size stage, we have miniatures of. So we would get them out, and I don't know exactly how Brent does his, but I always start with my wall configuration. And I will set up the walls the way I think that I want to do this one, figure out what my shooting area is, and then start placing targets in strategic locations so that, like I alluded to earlier, that you can't shoot all the targets from one spot. You need to make people move. You want to hide them a little bit. So that it makes the shooter think when they're going through, you know, how am I going to attack this stage and do it quickly, safely, and make sure that I get all of the targets? Which ones can I see from where? You know, there's a lot of planning that goes through a shooter's head just before the beep goes off. And that's, you know, we just, like Brent said earlier, We're trying to get people ready. Not only do we want the newer shooters to feel welcome and have a good time, but we want our regulars to be able to test themselves before they go to a bigger match.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. For me on that, and I don't know, maybe I'm just a little bit crazier in the head, but I've got stupid ideas. When I sit down in front of that thing and, you know, got a nice drink next to me and I've got music playing, I'm like, okay, I'm going to do something stupid. And usually that ends up not working out. Base it all. But it literally is using your imagination to exactly what Daryl said, push somebody, but do it safely. Mm-hmm. And of course with that, the hardest part about that for me is all of the rules that USPSA has about distances from steel and what what a shooting area is if the wall's inside of it. Can you touch the wall? And do, 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 do. And this is where you have to take as much of that out to stop the gaming, so that you don't have people calling the match director every 15 minutes to stage seven because they're like, well, yeah, but you can touch the wall here, can't you? No, it's outside the shooting area, you know, stuff like that. So,
do you find that as you're developing stages that you kind of, you said you kind of go crazy sometimes with like what you want to do in advance. But do you have like a set of like things that you maybe wrote down or even mentally or whatever, where you're like, I want to try to do this in a stage sometime?
Oh, all the time, Phil.
And why do you hate all the shooters by making these really difficult courses to fire?
And all the Texas Stars.
And all the and the Polish play racks.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what.
It doesn't make you really happy when you hear a shooter saying, oh, this course is so hard.
Or when
that's a tongue in cheek.
Someone's anyways. Shooting and then Phil just tells him, you can just stop. That happened to me once. I was having a war against a Texas Star.
Oh,
so bad. Well, come to find out, my red dot wasn't zero dot. No, that's not true. My red dot was loose. So
yeah.
So when I show up on a stage and Kyle tells me he hates me, I know I did my job right.
Yeah, exactly. You hear that, Kyle?
That's yep. Funny. Kyle's one of our. If for those that don't know, Kyle's one of our. He's a really good shooter at our club, and he usually squads with us. But I think that's, I don't know why.
No, I don't know why either. Because like him and Steven, like those two are, oh, you geez. Two, you two as well, Brent. I mean, you guys float through stages, and then I'm always like, okay, I thought I shot that well, but clearly I did not, and I shot it slow. Well, how old am I?
Yeah, and then you go watch David Miller tear down. I mean, you're just like, is he done already? That was like 6 seconds. Is this like two string stage? The whole thing of it is super fun. And going way back to the question you said, so what's next on that? And we were talking about once Daryl gets, it basically enters all the stages into the tablet, and mm-hmm. he didn't make that. He made that less complex than it is. You have to know your no shoots. You have to know if a target is a, non-scoring on miss and this and that. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff that goes into that. And then the part that I really kind of like, but yet I hate at the same time, is written stage briefings, because that's the first thing that the shooter is going to call the match director over for. Well, it says that I got to have my favorite. It says I got to have both. It says feet on marks. On start markers, usually how we'll write that. Mm-hmm. Well, can I just put this one on there? I said, is one a feet? But that's the type of stuff that you need to deal with. I'm like, okay, guys, I mean, you can if you want to try to do that. I said, but if the RO catches, he's not going to start you because it says feet on start marker.
Yeah.
Or touch and start marker.
That is one thing with USPSA is it is very much a gamer sport.
Sure.
Everybody's going to try to find every single thing possible to try to like be faster. Like I still remember that one match we were at, right, where we had the lady who was like, her start position was like bizarre.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Like how she had her hands, like I don't remember. Do you remember how she was doing that?
It was raining and she didn't want water on her optics, so she's trying to bend over her.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, she was like halfway bent over thinking it was going to give her an advantage.
That's right. She's like, go ahead, start, go, go, go. She wanted me to start her real quick. And boy, I drug that out like a two-step on a dog. It's like, no.
Wow.
But regarding stage design, and I want to ask this before I forget, or I guess maybe more of a point, and you guys can kind of speak to this as well. Controversial point. The stages that you get at a level one match are probably going to be more fun from a prop perspective and even like a crazy design perspective than you're going to get at a level three, even a level two match, because you guys can use stuff that if it fails, you can kind of baby it to make it get through the match, right? Whereas like putting a Texas Star is not necessarily repeatable at a higher level match, for example.
I've never seen a Texas Star at a level three or higher match.
Really?
they're too complicated.
They take too long to reset.
Absolutely.
Professional, or what do they call it? Competitive equity, where like, oh, the star, the one plate was off by 2 degrees compared to the other shooter. That kind of stuff.
If you can't give every shooter, every competitor, I'm trying to change that word from shooter to competitor, by the way.
Yep.
Every competitor, the same opportunity, then you have a problem. And you literally, one of the things that a competitor can do in a match, any match, is have arbitration. They can fill out paperwork and basically pay a fee to have something reworked or relooked at by the range master and the match director. Thank God we've never had that. And none of you guys that are listening to that, do that to us, because I'll just throw you off the roof or something. But so you just, a lot of times you don't have that complex, like you're saying, something that can't be reproduced.
Now, they also shy away from pretty much any type of a mover because of the time it takes to reset and the possibility of equipment failure. When you're running 400 shooters in a match, you don't have time to deal with that kind of stuff.
That's a really good point. Wow.
And if it gets thrown out, like Daryl's saying, like literally that range master would have to come in and say, look, we're not duplicating, the equipment isn't working right. And where were we at where we threw one out? One got thrown out.
Yeah, it was a state match, actually, at South Kent.
Yeah, it was.
Was it?
Yeah, because one of the, like, I was actually on the stage as an RO that year. They had an issue with one of the activation pieces kept getting hung up. This dude kept running dirt into the path that they had created, unfortunately.
Okay. All right.
But I a lot of that to say, one reason why I think at South Kent Sportsman's Club, why the USPSA matches have become so popular is because you are seeing a lot of that stuff that you guys are willing to take the risk to do and to get right with the setup crew in advance that you just don't get the opportunity to shoot on a flat range when you're with your buddies or at any other match in the area. Like, I know you guys have set up where there is a slider that runs on a wire that goes from one end of the bay to the other. Mm-hmm. And I remember the first time I saw that and I was like, I hate you guys so much. Because this is going to be so much fun because you don't know what to do.
For tall people like you guys.
Well, that's fair. I think I had to duck down to like a porthole in that case though. Just, I want to point that out.
The reason that we're able to do that is because of our setup crew.
100%.
These guys have these movers and activators and everything dialed in. They know what they're doing and they can set them up so that they will run reliably for the entire match.
Yep.
If we didn't have them and if they weren't able to do that, then we wouldn't be able to use them. It's simple.
I keep talking about our relationship with the other action sports, three gun. I mean, Steel Challenge. No, because it just doesn't, carry over.
It's not a freestyle match.
Right. So yeah, it's not a freestyle. IDPA, like this next month, we're going to have two stages on the ground left over from IDPA that we'll build upon. And it may or may not have a mover that goes across the whole back of the stage.
Yes.
Yay.
He pretends like he doesn't like it, but he likes the fact that it's not just a static target.
It is crap. And see,
I digress. Moving on. All right. So
you sound like an animal, like a manatee.
So the cool once again, the cool thing about South Kent, IDPA is going to have a couple stages on the ground that we're going to use. I would venture to say that at least one of those stages that our three gun match director is going to keep when he comes through on Saturday for the Sunday shoot. So we're just getting a lot of use out of not only stages, but shaking hands with the other action sports, making sure that there's times Daryl and I will put a more complicated, bigger stage out that there's more movement in, because we know that the three gun match director is probably going to use it the next day. And a couple of those have been, I'll tell you what, there is one of those stages I'm going to bring back that we had out Bay Eye or whatever, but it was really fun. And it was one of the ones that I had this crazy idea for, and it actually worked out for a change. I want to bring that one back sometime, probably this year. So,
so how far in advance do you guys plan these stages?
Did a horse just snort?
It's me. What Daryl and I are not only master, but obviously you guys know that we are the closest friends. We have been friends. Our wives are. We get together as much as we possibly can for friendship
And play Catan.
Oh, and stop! Completely ruined this whole podcast. I'm out.
Wait, do you not like Catan?
I love getting together with my friends, but we play Catan and it's just painful, man.
We have been playing Catan for eight years.
Wow, it seems longer. Seems a lot longer.
Almost every weekend.
Yeah,
Tyler, I think we need to have him back on for an episode about Catan.
Yes, I've played Catan like three times.
Okay, so here's the deal.
Two of them were with Phil.
Remember off air we were talking about why we don't get together and have this like in one room and everybody sit around? Don't ever have me over because I'll...
Wait, anyway. What? Say that again?
If we were in the same room right now, Phil would be getting a microphone in his ear.
Okay. Catan, please sponsor us.
Oh my gosh. They're, you know, we found out what Catan stood for. They probably, you can't have guns in Catan. Anyway, I got to go back to where we were at because I can't remember where we were at.
How far in advance do you guys plan these stages? Thank you.
So I went by telling you, Daryl and I get together as much as we can with our wives and we just have a fantastic time, you know, being friends. Mm-hmm. We usually get together the Saturday night. So that's usually after a match. Daryl and I have massive conversations not only about how the match went, what mm-hmm. we did, what we did right, what we did wrong, and where we're going to go the next time. So literally one day, and we start planning the next match.
That's awesome.
The one
if I wanted to make about, a... Okay, go ahead.
Well, this is our third season, so we are... when we build stages, especially the good ones, like Brent said, that he wants to bring back, we're getting quite a...
Portfolio, to call that.
Thank you. Yes, we're getting quite a few stages that we can, you know, go back to and pull up. It doesn't mean we'll set them up exactly the way they are. We might move mm-hmm. a few targets here and there, but, you know, it's getting easier because we have stuff that's already on paper that we can adjust here and there.
How often do you guys reuse stages, I guess, or modify like that? How often do you guys make up completely new ones?
I don't know. I'm actually looking at our stages right now. So last month's match at South Kent were all stages that we had done in the past.
Okay.
But like Daryl said, they weren't. They may have been the nucleus of it, but then we Scooby-Doobied them around and did all kinds of stuff and we made them different, even though they came from this new, you know, this idea, this base idea. So I will have to say every time we have a different stage, we don't carry them over.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Having shot most of the matches that you guys have put on, I honestly didn't even know that those stages were like the bones of other stages that you had done in the past.
That's a good word there. The bones. I like that.
Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna keep an eye on this.
Go ahead.
I'm gonna start documenting.
Right now, Daryl and I probably have. Do you know how many you have, like, Daryl? As far as like what you have built,
I would have to say somewhere between 20 and 25.
Okay, so my last count is 52 that I have built.
Wow.
Wow.
But like I'm saying, some of them are so stupid, they're never going to see the light of day.
So. I honestly, though, and I'm curious about how you guys get feedback on this. So some of the times when you guys make the stages that are non-traditional USPSA stage, and I say obviously you're still following all the rules and everything, but you may add a little extra spice into it. I personally, I love those stages, and it just breaks up. Like, everyone's trying to, you never know what you're going to get, right? It's like the mover thing. Do you guys usually get good feedback on those stages that are a little bit outside the normal, or do people are like, oh, this is not a USPSA stage?
normally we do. There are a few people that will say every time that they don't like them, and it's just because they don't like them, and they're going to let us know about it. Yep. It's something about having a mover in the stage that they just don't think it belongs there, and they're never going to say that they enjoyed it. Plate racks are the same way. You know, some people just have a thing about plate racks. There's nothing wrong with using them, but some people just think they're stupid, and they always will. Doesn't matter what we do. But that doesn't mean
Texas Stars are stupid.
I love Texas Stars. Please use them. Put two of them on a stage sometime.
Did you not shoot the double star?
I did, actually, and I was just going to bring that up. The double Death Star, that was fantastic.
That was Daryl. Oh, and another thing, I'm sorry, rabbit trail here. Daryl came up with last year a fantastic idea. We kind of copied it, but one of the things that Daryl and I are good at is we look at something and go, oh, yeah, we can do that better. We can make that cooler, faster, better, whatever. Daryl built arms to go on our star mechanism that had cardboard targets that spun.
Oh, yeah.
And I tell you what, we got a lot of good feedback about that. They said, man, that was super fun. And we activated the stupid thing so that it was stationary until you activate it with a drop and a popper, and it pulled a pin, had a weight, spin that thing. And it's like, oh, okay, here we go. Once again, you're probably never going to see at a three or maybe two level three, four match, because you can't replicate it that well. It spun slower from them. It was humid out. It was windy out. The sun was shining on it. I mean,
the pacer slowed it down.
Exactly. It's like, yeah, it was more shot up, so it was lighter. It spun faster. Like, what are you talking about? So anyway.
Yeah. And a lot of those people, you know, if you're a new shooter, yes, very difficult, right, to engage something like that. Mm-hmm. But as you progress, you know, even as like an intermediate shooter, those things are the things that become fun and enjoyable to shoot, right? And I think those ideas and concepts were, number one, you have a star, right? Where, yes, you're engaging the plates. You can actively see the plates fall off the star. You can hear the ting noise of it hitting, you know, so you know you've at least hit it. With a star that has paper, you have no idea. Whether or not you actually hit the paper. And yep. I think that makes it fun and more challenging, right? And people may curse you about it, but in the end of the day, if you keep coming back with, and this is not like a you guys, but like a general you, if you come back with the same boring stages, nobody's going to want to come shoot, right? We're out there to have fun. That's why I appreciate these wild stages.
That when you talked about the kind of the weird stage and stuff, Daryl came up with was it you that did the pizza thing, Daryl?
No.
I remember that one. That was funny.
Oh, that was left over from the IDPA state match.
Yep.
That's right. That they had to hold a pizza box up over your shoulder for your start position. That was, my God. It was the worst part about it, Tyler, is that these guys didn't want the pizza box to get messed up, so they filled it full of doggone OSB, so it was about 8 pounds.
Oh my goodness, that's amazing.
It was a meat lover's pizza.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
With a lot of meat on it. A
lot of meat on it. And I know we're rabbit trailing, but I loved Snakes on a Plane. We took that from them.
That was awesome. Too, yep.
Which was awesome. So, yeah, kudos to our IDPA brothers and sisters over there. They did a good job.
Oh, man. So I guess, Philip, is there anything else you want to add or ask?
So one thing I would add, and I know because, you know, Brit and Errol, they may ask for this kind of stuff, but this is a general request. If you can and you have the capability to do so, volunteer at your local match, right? Like this stuff is all, again, it's all volunteers. It's just that. So I know we have the Geezer Squad that does the setup. If you're on the stage at the end of the day, like we said earlier, help tear down the stage, ask how you can help keep things move like smoothly throughout the day. Like every individual that's there, don't just sit back and not pace targets or not help score or whatever it may be. Be part of the community. And then the biggest thing you can do is give your match directors grace. Because I knew that you going into this episode, I knew you guys did a lot of stuff. because that we would talk about it. But I did not realize the sheer volume of things that you are responsible for prior to, day of, and then day after. Yep. So I'm very appreciative of everything that you guys have done.
And once again, Daryl gets a lot of kudos for this, because afterwards, then there's going to be, well, this happened or that happened or whatever. So he has to deal with that as well, which he's very to the point. He's kind, but he's also really strict from the standpoint of, well, was it the same for everybody? Could you have, whatever, was it your gun? Was whatever. I just had an epiphany of one thing that I did want to mention, that we should have talked about in episode one, when we were talking about just USPSA, a little bit of etiquette from squads. If you come up to a stage and the squad is still shooting, hear me loud and clear on this, guys, especially the South Kent people. If they're still shooting, stay the heck out of their way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If you think you're going to step up and kind of start checking the stage out and stuff, yeah, by all means, please do that. Back by the hide, stay out of their way. If you want to go and pace, sure, you can go and help them pace. But man, stay out of that box, stay out of the way. It's probably one of the biggest complaints that we have, that Daryl and I have. The most complaining is somebody's in the way or whatnot. But that stage is whoever squad is on it, it is their stage until they turn it over to you, until they're out, until they're clear. So just stay out of their way. Be a good shooter person.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That is actually really true. And if you people that go out there and they try to walk the stage when people are still trying to reset and do stuff, they get in the way and they actually slow things down even more.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember very, very specifically that, okay, so USPSA is a game and we do tend to game stuff. We do walk the stages like during the 5 minute, like after the brief has been read. But we also have the ability, if you are the shooter on deck while the stage is being reset, you have the ability to walk the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And in general, most people try to stay out of your way on your squad while you're doing it. And obviously that doesn't always happen. But last match, we had people that were walking the stage while I'm trying to get in my frame of mind to try to get through the stage. I ran into a guy and he like looked at me like incredulously, like it was my fault. And I'm like, dude, I'm trying to walk the stage here. And that was really frustrating.
Someone from a different squad?
Yeah. Someone from a different squad.
Really?
And I'm like, dude, like, please let us have the stage until we're done. So even from a shooter's perspective, not even just a match director's perspective, like be respectful of your fellow shooter.
That is the closest I have ever come to DQing somebody for unsportsmanlike conduct.
10-6-1
really? for that very thing.
Wow.
Yep.
And as match directors, I know that sounds mean, like meanies and all that stuff, but we have the right to do that. Especially if mm-hmm. it is a, let's call it, a continued thing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's even what you talked about last week, Brent, how be a good man, not a nice guy. Yep. Good men don't let people run over other people and cross boundaries like that. So it's like, oh, no, you can't do this. This is not right. So.
Yep. I hear you. The sad part about it is we could go on and on. I know you guys are trying to hold this into a time frame, but that's another place where the RO or the CRO really can be a champion for their squad that they're with or that they're running. Is, you know, they have the right to say, hey guys, you're clear, you're out, you can't be in here when this squad has stage, and even though you're traveling with them. Another kudo I have to get out, all you guys that are coming to South Kent to shoot these USPSA matches that are filling RO duties. I mean, obviously at a level, you know, a club level match, a level one match, we don't have ROs at every stage from our club, but you guys that are coming in, there's a bunch of names that come to mind. I won't name you, but thank you for coming in and being that RO that keeps things moving, and couldn't do without you.
No, and we couldn't move our match forward without them. Nope. You know, we're getting to the point where we're comfortable with, running stages that use a different scoring program, not just Comstock all the time. We can throw throw a Virginia count stage in there once in a while and know that it's going to be shot correctly. And that's all geared towards getting people ready for the next level match.
So
as much as Tyler hates
What is a Comstock? What's a Virginia? I still have no idea what those are.
Yeah, I know. As much as Tyler hates Texas Star, I hate Virginia stages because I can't count.
I have no idea what they are. I'm just like, all right, I just shoot it.
So I guess the biggest thing, and there's more than just that, but and this is something we probably should have covered last week as well.
I know. Maybe we're going to have to do a part two to last week.
Yeah.
This is why we have part two. Comstock, we're good.
When you shoot a Comstock stage, you can basically shoot as many times as you want. The best two hits on the cardboard targets count, and that's what they score.
Gotcha.
When you shoot a Virginia stage, you can only shoot twice at each one.
Gotcha.
If you miss, you can't take a follow-up shot. If you shoot three times at one target, it count. It's a penalty. You get penalized for taking more than one shot or more than two shots. Mm-hmm. So it... You know, accuracy comes into play a little bit bigger. Your stage design, your planning comes into play. Where you're going to do your reloads, things like that. But there's a lot more to think about with a Virginia count stage.
It's a lot tougher on the ROs as well.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, you got to be on your toes with this. And it's one of the reasons that club level matches kind of shy away from that. There may or may not be a Virginia count in the next match, by the way.
You hear that, Philip?
Gotta get ready, man. Carry Optics Nationals in June, man. We gotta get ready.
Yeah. And I will say too, though, that like when you mentioned the RO thing earlier, and on those Virginia count stages, man, it is really nice because typically you'll have, you know, you try to have at least two ROs per stage, but sometimes it's nice to have like a third set of eyes on stuff to find out, like, hey, you know, did this person hit a fault line? Because the other two ROs are trying to count shots and, you know, you figure out where, you know, what order they did things or whatever it is, you know, that makes it more difficult for them. So
that was one of the best things that I had the most fun with really at the Nationals. Cause I've worked a big match. I've worked like sectional or state or whatever that was, but how that is supposed to be, you know, you've got a timer, you've got the RO that is in control of the range and the safety of the timer. You have a scorer, you know, somebody that has the tablet, you have a weak side. So basically you've the timekeeper or the timer is following your shooter, your competitor, through the course of fire, safely keeping everything going and all that, gives the commands. These other outside two are watching. They're watching for foot faults. They're counting shots. They're looking for wall strikes, for it, you know, all the things that we're trained to do. And then if you're really running a good team, you actually have four ROs or three ROs and a CRO, and somebody's taking a break. So you run a squad of 10 people through. One person actually gets to take a break, sit down, have a snack, get a drink, get out of the sun, and then you rotate them back in, and you keep rotating around and around and around. And you usually want that person coming off of their break going on timer, because that's usually the time you have to spend more energy and more brain function doing that. So I loved learning that. And it just like you said, Phil, all those eyes on there. I can't tell you how many times during this last Nationals where we had wall strikes that, you know, our timer RO didn't see because they're watching the gun. You know, they're watching.
Yeah, that's all a good point.
They're not looking at where things are going and stuff like that. They're paying attention to the safety of that. So it's a really good system, and it's really fun to have a team like that that's going on. I love it. I hope I love it for a long time. So
That makes sense. Well, any closing thoughts, guys?
Be courteous to your fellow shooter.
Yeah.
Don't forget where you started.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's like really, I don't know if I can top that.
All right. Well, your next Brent.
Wow. That's really good, Daryl.
That is really good.
Yeah. If I was going to say anything about this, if anybody's listening, if you're even remotely thinking about getting into USPSA or to action shooting of any sort, find a good club. I highly recommend South Kent for all the reasons that we spoke about for the last two episodes of this podcast, but come in and like Phil said, or Tyler said, come in and watch one. Come in and talk to us. Talk to the competitors and see what they're running, see what they're doing. We have literally had people that wanted to get into us that after the match, Daryl and I have made the range clear. We pulled everything, you know, we've done everything that we were supposed to, and we would actually have them with one of us shoot through and see how they liked it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's actually how I got into shooting USPSA. The previous match director I was watching, and he's like, "Do you have a gun with you?" And I said, "Yeah, it's in my car." He said, "Go get it."
Yep.
And I did, and I have been shooting since.
That's awesome.
So, that and be courteous to your other shooters.
For sure. what you got for us, Philip?
Just kind of going on what I said before is be courteous to your match directors, plural, if you have them, the RM, you know, or the ROs, the CROs, you know, everyone who's running the match, because they're volunteering their time so that you can have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
How about you, Tyler? What's your words of wisdom there, Spinier?
So I actually have a quote from Dr. Henry Cloud. So his is, "An excuse is an anesthetic. It may temporarily relieve your pain, but when the effect wears off, your situation has not improved." So for those who are having excuses of not getting started in action sports, whether it's USPSA or IDPA, it's an excuse, man. Just do it. It's going to be so worth it. You're going to have so much fun. So just do it, bro.
All right. With that, we ask you to subscribe to the podcast. Go on there and give us a rating and a review if you can. At some point, we're going to start reading those on live on air, I think.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Read it on air, maybe do Q&A. It'd be great, man.
Yeah. And follow us on Instagram. Tyler especially has been posting a ton of stuff on there lately from training we've been doing for the Wolverine 5K. And get involved with your local shooting club.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I just bought a Insta 360 Go 3. I'm having a lot of fun with that thing, dude.
I just bought a gas mask.
Oh, that's the best line in the whole thing, Phil.
Oh, dude. And that's going to be our clip right there.
Oh, just bought a gas mask.
The way you were talking earlier, you need one.
I know.
Oh, that's great.
Shepherd's Pie by Maria. Please sponsor us.
Oh, that's funny. All right, with that, thanks, everyone. We'll see you next week.
See y'all.
See ya.
Thank you, everybody.